And welcome, gentle listener, to The Talking Show, Kaechung Radio, Chinatown's only micro-broadcasting radio station's only all-talking, all-the-time radio show. Tonight, we feature Patricia and Ellen one more time. So, if that's okay with you, why don't you stop talking and listen to Patricia and Ellen do some talking.
Hello, everyone.
Hey.
You are listening to The Talking Show on Kaechung Radio. I am Nicholas Miller, here with my co-host, Stephen Cato.
Hi there.
How are you doing today, Steve?
Oh, well, thanks for asking, Nick. I'm okay. Just gearing up for the holiday chaos and all that, right?
Good. Good. How about that weather out there, eh?
Yeah. No, tell me about it. It's just not what we want here in Los Angeles. It's going to be rainy. It's a little cold. I don't know. It's like back east.
Right. Right. Well, let me tell you something, Steve. Number 6, Matilda. Matilda stops cleaning. Matilda, this is how I imagine my parents. Music, a dashing couple appears. They are dancing. They are not the best dancers in the world. They laugh until laughing makes them kiss. They kiss until kissing makes them laugh. They dance. They laugh until laughing makes them kiss. They kiss until kissing makes them laugh. Matilda watches. Matilda longs for them.
Wow. Wow, wow.
Steve, what do you think about infinity? Or what do you think about ideas that are too big to talk about?
It's good that you mention it. It's one of my favorite subjects, infinity, actually. I think it's kind of the most pressing ethical site for a creative person is infinity. I think that's kind of our, I'm an artist by my day job, and you are, of course, a composer. We're both creative people, and I would say that ethically speaking, our primary duty is to infinity, and through that everything, we come to other ethical situations. It's a thing I sort of inherited, I guess, from Levinas, but I do think it really is like the greatest place we could ever know. Don't you think so, Nick?
Interesting. Well, Levon and I, we hung out last night. Well, not really. We didn't really hang out. He came over to borrow one of my favorite records, the record that I was speaking with him about when he was here on the show a few weeks ago. And then I said, hey, do you maybe want to have a drink? And he was like, no, I'm really just here for the record. But, you know, I'll take a beer. And so I went back and I got him a beer. And when I brought it out, I was about to crack it open. I love the sound of cracking open a beer.
Oh, man, yeah, tell me.
I was going to crack it open. And he goes, hey, no, don't open that yet. I think I'm going to take it to go.
What?
And I was like, to go? What do you mean you're going to take it to go?
Yeah, what does he mean?
Oh. But, you know how much I like Levon, so totally, I gave him the beer, and he thanked me, and he said, you know, he was going to listen to the record I lent him and drink the beer, and then he went on his way, and that was about it.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, as much as we both like Levon, and as much as he's a close friend of mine and a friend of yours, and... You know, his New Year's parties are legendary, I think. Our social group would be at a loss without him, really. He isn't always the soul of tact, though, is he, Nick? I mean, I was at Tommy's with him the other day on 3rd, getting a chili burger, you know, as you do at Tommy's. And these girls pulled in who I guess had met Levon at some social function. These are fancy, you know, designer everything, real fancy ladies. And maybe they'd met him slightly. I don't think they had met him, you know. They didn't know him very well. And so as they're coming up to say hi to Levon, Levon just, he doesn't stand up to greet the ladies. He doesn't, you know, go for a handshake or a hug or anything. He just sits still, and then he lets out this, like, absolutely unbelievable fart and then sort of grunts at them a bit. And they, you know, and I say, oh, hi, I'm Steve. And they don't, you know, whatever. And then as Levon and I are leaving, though, you know, the girls get their stuff to go and they're off. And Levon and I were back in Levon's convertible and we're just driving away, going to go see the Muppets movie. And then they just start texting him. And they're, like, texting him and texting him and texting him. And he got, like, maybe, I would say, like, 15 messages from one of them, the tall one. And, you know, whatever happened there, he just, some crazy thing happened. And even though it was maybe one of the rudest things I've ever seen in my life, somehow it works out for him. I don't know. It's a mystery to me, Nick. I know.
Well, let's get to the topic at hand. We have two very special ladies here with us.
Very special.
All the way from the United Kingdom.
From the UK.
Not our first guests from that part of the world, but some very special ones nonetheless. We have Patricia and Ellen. They're going to give a very special reading this evening. We hope you all enjoy it. Here they are.
Start your practice by coming into wide child's pose. Exhale. Shift all the weight to the right side and soften. Inhale. Come back to your center. Exhale. Shift all the weight to the left side and soften. Inhale. Come back to your center. Exhale. Shift to the right. Inhale.
Repeat broadcast!
Exhale. Shift to the left. Inhale. Come back to your center. Exhale. Shift to the right. Inhale. Come back to your center. Exhale. Shift to the left. Inhale, come back to your center and soften. Press yourself up into your box.
Xerox and infinity.
If men create or have fantasies of intelligence machines, it is because they secretly despair for their own intelligence, or because they succumb to the weight of a monstrous and useless intelligence. They therefore exercise it into machines to enable them to lighten this load and laugh about it. Entrusting this intelligence to machines in some ways sets us free from all pretensions towards exhaustive knowledge, just as confiding power to political men allows us to laugh at all pretensions to grub men. If, against all the evidence, men dream of original and brilliantly throughout machines, it is because they despair for their own originality, or prefer to part with it in favour of the sheer pleasure of machines that grant them by this by proxy. Firstly, what these machines do offer is the spectacle of thought, and men, as they manipulate them, devote themselves more to the spectacle of thought than to thought itself.
We do not call them virtual for no reason, for they maintain thought in indefinite suspense. Linked to the deadline for exhaustive knowledge, here the process of thought is indefinitely postponed. The question of thought can no longer be asked of them, nor the question of freedom for future generations. They will cross over life as if it were airspace, fastened to their seats, and thus men of artificial intelligence will cross over their mental space, fastened to their computer. Virtual man, immobile in front of his computer, makes love by the screen and gives classes by teleconference. He becomes a spastic, probably with cerebral handicap too. This is the cost of becoming effective. Just as we can suggest that glasses or contact lenses might one day become the integrated processes of a species whose gaze would have gone, so can we fear that artificial intelligence and its technological aids will become the processes of a species whose thought will have disappeared?
Artificial intelligence is without intelligence because it is without artifice. The genuine artifice is the artifice of the body in the state of passion. The one of the sign is in seduction, of ambivalence in gesture or eclipse in language, of the mask on the face of the shaft which alters meaning and which for this reason we call shaft a wit. Indeed, these intelligence machines are only artificial in the weakest sense of the word, decomposing the operations of language, of sex, of knowledge. Eclipse in language has nothing to do with the fact of the spark which alters meaning. These machines and the games they propose, games of communication and combination, alter the sign. Digitalizing the sign gesture of language in a state of passion. A potential program of a program, games of communication and combination sign the alteration of reality. And for this reason, transparency of ambivalence is the gesture of knowledge to generate all the possibilities of a program seduced. By their own knowledge, artificial intelligence, it is the force of illusion. The ambience of passion, in the weakest sense of the word, to generate all the possibilities to re-synthesize according to models in the state of reality. Their functionality has nothing, and not only in the visual sense. Artificial intelligence can be described as ambivalence, transparency in a state of virtual passion, absence of passion in a state of ingenuineness or of a potential spark which alters language. Because they do not even succumb to their own subject, in a state of passion it is the force of illusion and combination which gives them their virtue, and they propose the spoke which alters meaning to resynthesize them. They can be described as virtuous and not only as virtual. A potential functionality of artificial meaning seduced. Indeed, nothing the sign described. The generation of eclipse in language alters nothing.
Yeah, right. State of passion language is a force of illusion which alters meaning when in fact the alteration of reality is the alteration of reason. This is why to generate all the possibilities of ambulance in gesture, to generate all the possibilities of eclipse in language, what gives them the virtue, their transparency, their own knowledge. The spark which alters the alteration of reality can be described as virtuous because it is artifice without language. The genuine artifice is the artifice of the body and combination. Word games alters meanings of eclipse in language. Intelligence, functionally knowledge, meaning the genuine sign in seduction, is a machine and potential object, a reality, the one of the sign in seduction. Transparency also alters nothing. It is the face of illusion and of virtue, when in fact the sign is seduction, is language which gives they subscribe seduced to their own generation of eclipse in language and combination of eclipse in language, what gives them their virtue. A program ledge, and in their most basic elements of digitalizing such operations to recipe, then according to models, to generate all the possibilities of a program or of a potential object, when in fact artifice is nothing to do with the generation, but the alteration of reality. It is the force of illusion. Once again, these machines have only the ingenuous of sums and operations, and the sole games they process are games of communication and combination. This is why they can be described as virtuous, and not only as virtual, because they do not even succumb to their own subject, and they are not even seduced by their own knowledge. What gives them their virtue is their transparency, their functionality, their absence of passion and artifice. Artificial intelligence is a celibate machine.
What will always differentiate the functioning of men and even the most intelligent machines is the ecstasy of functioning itself. Pleasure. Fortunately, to invent machines that will recognise pleasure is as yet beyond man's capabilities. All types of prostheses may contribute to his pleasure, but he cannot invent machines that would accept pleasure by proxy. When he invents machines that are able to work, think, or travel better than him or for him, there is no prothesis. Technical or mediatized for the pleasure of being human. To achieve this, machines would require an idea of man, but for them it is already too late. It is man who invented them. That is why man can exceed what he is, while machines will never exceed what they are. The most intelligent are no more than exactly as they are, except maybe in accidents or failures, to which we can always subscribe an obscure desire. They do not possess this additional touch of irony in their functioning, this excess of functioning which pleasure or suffering consists of, whereby men move away from their limits and more closer to their end. Unfortunately, machines will never exceed their own operation, which may be explained the deep melancholy of computers. All machines are celibate. Yet the recent eruption of electronic viruses presents a remarkable anomaly, as if machines were taking malicious pleasure in amplifying and even producing perverted effects to overcome their finality through their own devices. There is an ironic and fascinating peripeteia. Artificial intelligence may be parodying itself with this visual viral pathology, thus unveiling some sort of genuine intelligence.
The celibacy of the machine brings about the celibacy of Telemach man, exactly as the grants himself the spectacle of his brain and his intelligence as he sits in front of the computer or word processor. telematic man gives himself the spectacle of his fantasies and of a virtual joyousness as he sits in front of his Minitel Rose. He exercises joyousness of intelligence in the interface with the machine. The other, the sexual or cognitive interlocutor, is never really aimed at crossing the screen, evokes the crossing of the mirror. The screen itself is targeted at the point of interface. The machine, the interactive screen, transforms the process of communications, the relation from one to the other, into a process of communication. The process of reversibility from the same to the same. The secret of the interface is that the other is in within its virtual, the same otherness being surreptitiously confiscated by the machine. And so would the most convincing surface communication be the one used by the Minitesseless Rose, who passed from the screen to the telephone exchange, then face to face, and then what? Oh, well, we're called each other, and we go back to the Minitel. In the end, so much more exotic, because it is both exotic and transparent, and at the same time pure from the communications, being entirely private, but for the presence of the screen and its electronic text as a watermark of life. New Platonican cavern, where one can watch the shadows of the carnal pleasure passing by. Why talk to each other when it's so easy to communicate?
We used to live in the imaginary world of the mirror, of the divided self and of the stage, of otherness and alienation. Today we live in the imaginary world of the screen, of the interface and the republication of continuity and networks. All our machines are screens. We too have become screens, and the interactivity of men has become the inactivity of screens. Nothing that appears on the screen is meant to be deciphered in depth, but actually to be explored instantaneously in an abbreviation, immediate to meaning, or an immediate convolution of the poles of representation. Reading a screen differs gently from reading an expression. It is a digital exploration where the eye moves along a non-stop dotted line. The link between the interlocutor in an communication and this access to knowledge in information, it is of the same order, tactile and exploratory. The voice in new computer sciences, or even on the phone, it is tactile voice, a functional non-voice. It is not really a voice anymore, just as the screen no longer really has an expression. The whole paradigm of sensitivity has changed. The tactility is not the organic sense of touch. It is only significance, the epidermic continuity of the eye and the image, the end of the aesthetic distance of expression. We are drawing infinity closer to the surface of the screen. Our eyes as if decentimated in the image. We no longer hold the distance a spectator has to the stage. There is no more scient decorum, and if we fall so easily into this kind of imaginary coma caused by the screen, it is because it creates perpetual vacuum which we are requested to fill. Proximity of images, condensing of images, tactile pornography of images. Though paradoxically, the image is still light years away. It would be a teleimage. It is situated at a very special distance that can only be defined as impassable by the body. The distance created by language, by the stage and by the mirror, is surmountable by the body. That is why the distance remains human and appeals to exchange. As for the screen, it is virtual and therefore insuperable. It leads itself solely to this abstract form of communication, abstract forever. In the domain of communication, words, gestures, and expressions are in a state of constant continuity, yet they never touch one another, because neither the distance nor the proximity belong to the body in relation to its surroundings. The screen of our images, the inactivity screen, the telematic screen, are all at the same time too close and too distant. Too close to be true, in order to have the dramatic intensity of a stage, too far to be forced to possess the conniving distance of artifice. That they thus create a dimension that is not exactly human anymore, an eccentric dimension corresponding to a depolarization of space and to the indistinctiveness of body silhouettes.
There is no topology more beautiful than Mobius, to designate the contiguity of the close and the distant, of interior and exterior, of object and subject in the same spiral. When the screen of our computers and the mental screen of our own brain become intertwined with each other as well, according to the same model, information and communication always feed back on themselves in a kind of an insensuous convolution, because they operate indefinitely continuity into a superficial indistinction between subject and object. Interior and exterior, questions and answers, event and image, a continuum that can only be solved in a loop, simulating the mathematical figure for infinity. The same process is involved with our relationship to our virtual machines. Telemac man is assigned to the setup in the same way that the setup is assigned to him by a de-evolution from the former into the latter. The refraction of the former by the latter. The machine does not what man wants it to do, but man in return performs only what the machine is programmed to do. He is the operator of virtuality, and his approach, apparently, it's merely to get informed or to communicate, but in reality, his approach is to explain all the virtues of the program, just as a gambler aims to exhaust all the virtualities of the game. When using a camera, for instance, these virtualities are no longer those of the subject who thinks of the world according to his vision, but those of the object exploiting the virtuality of the lens. In this perspective, the camera is a machine that alters all a thought, but erases all in technology, and also only the pure reflex of taking photographs to show through. Even vision is erased from the lens because it's substitute in complicity with the object, and therefore with a reversal of sight. It is indeed this de-evolution of the subject into the black box. This devolution of its vision to the impersonal eye of the camera, both of which are magical in the mirror, to subject plays with his imaginary self in the lens, on the screens in general, and on no account of all the medicated and telemac technologies, it is the object that potentially abandons itself. And it is the object's virtuality and not reality that imposes itself in the image. This is why Yeah, this is why today any image is possible. This is why anything can be computerized. This is to say, a something communicative in itself or in its own. Over to you.
You haven't finished it, because it goes on like digital. I think it finishes there.
Oh, right. Sorry about that. Just as they say individual is self-communicable according to her or his genital formula, all such work is going to consist of precisely exhausting the virtualities of this very program. The genetic code, and that will be a fundamental aspect of artificial intelligence. In concrete terms, it seems that there are no more acts or events that are not refracted in a technical image or on the screen. Not a single action, nor yearning to be photographed, filmed, recorded, and not yearning to flow into its memory and through the memory, and yearning to be eternally reproduced. No single action, not yearning to translate itself in virtual eternity, and as in death, which is durable, but as in the ramifications of artificial memories, which are ephemeral. The virtual commution is to potentially exist on all the screens and at the heart of all the programs, and this becomes a magical pre-sent condition. And where does that leave freedom? In nowhere land, and it is no choice, no final decision. All decisions concerning networks, screens, information, communication are serial, potential, fragmentally fractal. This succession only of particle decisions, the microscopic series of the particle sequence and objects, can constitute the cause of both photographer and telemac man, or the course of our most trivial televirtual reading. The structure of all these gestures is a quandary one. It is an uncertain set of dotted line-shaped decisions. And the fascination in all this comes from the dizzy spell contained in the black box, from the uncertainty that terminates our freedom. And I am a man, and I am a machine. There is no longer an answer to this anthropolitical question. Hence, this is the end of anthropology. In a way, itself succumbs, confiscated by the most recent machine and technologies, and anthropological uncertainty. Born of the perfecting of machine like networks, just as sexual uncertainty. Am I a man? Am I a woman? And how about sexual differences? Arise free sophistication tech questions of the unconscious and the technicals of the body. Sophistication, the undeceptible, just as radical uncertainty as far as the status of the subject and the object is concerned, arises from sophistication, the analysis of microscience.
Okay. Oh no, you've already. Oh yeah, it's escaped. Sorry. Am I a man? Am I a machine? The in-relationship between workers and traditional machines. There is no ambiguity whatsoever. The worker is always estranged from the machine and is therefore alienated by it. He keeps his precious quality of annihilation man to himself, whilst new technology, new machines, new images, interactive screens do not annihilate me at all. With me, they form an integrated circuit, video, TV, computer, Minitel, like contact lenses, are transparent prostheses, as if they were integrated to the body, to the point that they become a genetic part of it, like pacemakers or the famous papula of the Philip K. Dick, a small advertising implant grafted onto the body at birth, which serves a biological alarm. All our relationships, intentional or not, with networks and screens, whatever they are, the form of communication is of the same order, that of a subservient structure, which is not alienated, and also that of an integrated circuit. Here, the quality of human being, as opposed to being a machine, is undecisable. What would the fantastic success of artificial intelligence not come from the fact that it sets us free from real intelligence, from the fact that by giving the operational phenomenon of thought a hypertrophy, it sets us free from both the ambiguity and the singularity of thought, and from the irresolvable enigma of a thought in relation to the world. Would the fantastic success, yet to be forced and solicited, of all these interactive technologies not come from their function of exorcism and from the fact that the eternal problem of freedom can no longer be asked of them? What a relief! What of virtual machines? No more problems. Yet you are neither subject nor object, free nor alienated, no longer one or the other. You are the same. In the rapture of their communications, we have passed from the inferno of others to the ecstasy of the same, from the purgatory of otherness to the artificial heavens of identity. Would that form the basis of a new type of freedom? Some will say a new type of servitude, but telematic man, since he does not act of his own will, could never be a serf.
A serf? They were those serfs. An immense uncertainty is all that remains. This uncertainty, the very root of optional euphoria, resulting from the sophistication of networks of information and communication. Science has anticipated panic situations of uncertainty. By making a principle of it,
the prejudice of approximation of subject and object
in any experimental interface, and the fading of their respective positions, generates the definition status of uncertainty. As far as the reality of this object and the objective reality of knowledge may be this science progress, but it is no longer an object of progress. How could it ever be objective when none of the objects nor the results of the science themselves represent objective
progress
any longer? This is the very kind of progress that frees science from obscenity, which definitely distances it from the real world and from its own finances. This is fascinating, forming the nucleus of a situation that today seizes all human data, politically, socially, sexual, economic, uncertainty. In matters of the economic, when it persists, linked to the triumph,
resurrection of the discipline,
because a cheerful thing indeed, but just as a sudden and fabulous expansion of communication and information technology is connected to the undecidability which circulates in them.
The undecidability in communication is of knowing whether or not it is a genuine form of exchange, a real form of exchange. I defy anyone to decide this, rather to go on to believe that all these techniques finally lead to a real use of the world, to real encounters, etc. Even so, if this is an attempt to return to the real, why leave it in the first place? And why this immense detour? No one understands the stake of these techniques any longer if they are assigned such a weak objective. No, the crucial stake and the actual one is the game of uncertainty. Nowhere can we escape it, but we are not ready to accept it, and worse still, we expect some sort of homeopathic flight of fancy by reducing this uncertainty and with yet more information and yet more communication, thereby aggravating the relationship with uncertainty. Again, this is fascinating. The race chase of techniques and their perverted effects has started. The race chase of man and his virtual clones on the reversible track of the Mobius strip.
60, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 50, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 40, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 30, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 20, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Exhale, high push-up to low push-up. Inhale, upward facing dog. Exhale, take a push-up and press back. Inhale, bend your knees and look forward. Exhale, step forward. Inhale, halfway up. Exhale, forward bend. Inhale, sweep up. Exhale. Root the left foot deep into the earth and lift the right foot above the knee into the full expression of tree pose. And hold. Ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one. With control, slowly release your right foot. Root the right foot deep into the earth and lift the left foot above the knee into the full expression of tree pose. And hold. Ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one. With control, slowly release your left foot. Inhale, move the arms up. Exhale, forward bend. Inhale, halfway up. Exhale, step back. Inhale, upward facing dog. Exhale, downward facing dog. Drop the knees down and come into your box. Slide the right knee forward to the right wrist into half pigeon and rest. Pull the right leg in and sit back between the feet into knee pile. Take your bind. The right hand goes up and back. The left hand goes around and behind. And hold. Release your bind. Release the knee pile into your box. Slide the left knee forward to the left wrist, into half pigeon, and rest. Pull the left leg in and sit back between the feet into knee pile. Take your bind, the left hand goes up and back, the right hand goes around and behind, and hold. Release your bind. Release the knee pile into your box. Bring the feet in front of you and catch your toes with your fingers. On the exhale, extend your legs and keep the chest and thighs connected as you come into a seated forward bend. Keep your spine straight and soften. Release your toes and lay down flat on your mat. Come up into bridge pose and hold. Twenty, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one, ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, 1. Come up into full wheel pose. Press up through the hips and then up through the
thighs.
Toes are active and hold. 20, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Slowly come down to your mat. Bring your knees to your chest and rock your body side to side. Come down to your mat. Move into your rejuvenation pose. Extend your arms out to the side and bring your legs up perpendicular to the earth. Gently sway your feet side to side, making a figure eight in the air. Lift your feet all the way up into shoulder stand. Keep your body in a straight line with the shoulders directly in line with the hips. The back of your neck is flat on the earth. And hold. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Move into your plow pose. With control, let your legs come all the way over and let your toes touch the earth. And hold. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Catch the back of your thighs, calves or ankles, and slowly lower back down to the mat, vertebra by vertebra. Lie down flat on your mat and move into the most important pose of any yoga practice. If you have something to cover your eyes with, please do. I invite you to soften down into the earth. Close your eyes and allow your body to completely relax from head to toe. All is well. All you have to do here is breathe and rest. Breathe and rest. Breathe and rest. Allow your body to simulate the deep transformation. Breathe and rest. Breathe and rest. Breathe and rest.
Whoa. 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 Whoa.
Whoa.
Whoa. Whoa.
Whoa.
Whoa. Whoa. Whoa.
That was really special.
Whoa.
Yeah, what'd you think, Steve?
Oh.
What did you think?
I loved it. It was great. It was the best Baudrillard I've ever heard in my life, actually. Yeah. How did you feel about it?
Yeah. Nick? You know, I was thinking during the thing that there was a great deal of counterpoint going on there. As a self-proclaimed lover of counterpoint, Steve, what do you think about the counterpoint in their performance?
I feel a little on the spot here. I feel like, you're using your area of professional competence of specialization to pin me down on this counterpoint thing. I mean, it's true, earlier I did say that I've never properly understood harmony, and thus I felt more connected, let's say, to counterpoint. But that's just the way it is, you know? I was a drummer in high school, you know, some things just don't come naturally to me that way. I'm not comfortable with being personified that way, Nick.
Oh, yeah. I could not agree more. Nope, couldn't even agree more. Not at all. It was full of points and then counters to those points. I would say there's a little bit of harmony in there as well, but
yeah, sure, totally.
I'll take the counterpoint approach if that's where you want to take this.
These girls keep texting me.
Being a lover of counterpoint, as you are.
Sorry. Anyway, I don't think. Yeah. Okay. Look, you're a composer, Nick. You're a composer. You're the composer here.
Okay. Well, enough said about our good friends Patricia and Ellen. I hope they have a safe trip back to the United Kingdom.
Yeah, LaVon's going to pick them up and take them to LAX in a minute, so they should start getting packed.
And I hope everyone's getting all sorts of good shopping done. We'll let you go so you can take care of that. We do have one more episode left.
Just one.
We're going to try and squeeze one more in before our labor union is going to force us to go back on vacation. I'm sure you guys remember our last vacation to Ibiza, which was very relaxing.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to a very nice vacation.
Tell me about it.
Isn't that right, Steve?
Yeah. Oh, man. We're still making up our minds about where we're going to go, but hopefully, you know, whatever your holiday plans are, things are moving just as smoothly as ours
are. Well, last time Steve drank a little bit too much on our vacation. Hey, well, let's hope he can keep himself under control. Yeah. Okay. Good night, everyone. Thank you for listening to The Talking Show, and thank you for tuning in to K-Chung Radio. Bye-bye.
See you guys later.